You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ermillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. The rematch between the Heat and Nets took place on Monday night, just 2 days after Bam Adebayo put the NBA on notice with a career-high 41 points. And while Bam had another really solid night on Monday, 26 points, the outcome was unfortunately the same as Brooklyn found a way to beat Miami despite trailing for most of the game. The Heat were without Tyler Hero and Jimmy Butler once more, but they jumped out to an early lead anyway. And while the Nets struggled with their shooting, finishing at just 28% from three, they kept finding a way to stay close to the Heat. Miami, led by Adebayo and Goran Dragic, still in the starting lineup. Yeah, he put up 21 points of his own on 6 of 9 shooting from 3. They kept pulling away from the Nets, and they were able to hold on to a slim lead again for most of the game. But while Bam and Dragic were scoring with ease, the rest of the Heat lineup was absolutely disastrous. Without that duo, the rest of the Heat shot a combined 14 of 52, 27% from the field. And from 3, even worse. A combined 4 of 33, 12%. Ugh. And still, the Heat were down by only one with over 4 minutes to play until James Harden, former Heat legend James Harden, had been somewhat passive throughout the game and then just kind of simply took over and led a 15-0 run that put the Heat to bed. Miami drops their overall record to 6-10 before coming back to Miami for a 6-game homestand. They are off until Wednesday, when they host the Denver Nuggets. And some good news, it appears that Jimmy Butler is clear of the health and safety protocols and is going to be available to play soon. Perhaps, fingers crossed, even by Wednesday. Tyler Hero could also be back as well, so the Heat will get a much-needed boost offensively and defensively. I think Avery Bradley is still likely to be out for some time, and Myers Leonard probably will be out as well, but at least with Jimmy and Tyler back, Miami gets, well, a much-needed scoring punch and some stability on defense because, well, they certainly could have used both of those players on Monday night. As far as the game itself is concerned, the Heat wasted another big game from Bam, and worse, it was a hot shooting night from Goran. That collective performance should have been enough. But everyone else in that rotation, especially the team's so-called shooters, should be embarrassed. It was an ugly display, and I don't have any explanation for it. I rewatched all 43 of Miami's shot attempts from beyond the arc. And while you have to give Brooklyn some credit for closing out and putting a hand up to deter Miami shooters, the truth is that most of those shots were uncontested, or at least totally makeable shots. Duncan's shots were almost always on the move, but those are the same shots that he always hits. And Kelly Olynyk continues to struggle, and yet he felt comfortable taking shots on sidestep three-pointers or even worse from 30 feet out. But those are shots that we've seen him make throughout his Heat tenure. And Kendrick Nunn, who had been so impactful over the last week or so, finished just 1 of 8 from three-point range. Those three players combined to shoot an ungodly 2 of 23 from three-point range. Absolutely horrendous. Olynyk and Robinson in particular just seemed really out of sorts. Kendrick, well, you know what he's going to do. He's going to go attack the basket. He's going to find a way to contribute. He still wound up finishing with, I think, 11 points of the night because he just kept pushing 5 of 17 from the floor despite his woeful shooting from three-point range. But as far as Olynyk and Robinson are concerned, they were just completely mitigated, wiped out. You didn't even know they were out on the floor. Olynyk played some solid defense. Robinson had a nice drive to the rim. It's just, other than that, I mean, I don't know what they were doing out there. And it seems pretty obvious, at least to me, maybe I'm reading into it, it seems like something's going on psychologically. And I don't know if it's the trade talk. I don't know if it's the long season, the winter months coming, catching up to them, the fact that they've been traveling the way they have. And maybe it's just the toll of being on the road and being stuck in your hotel, you know. Players have talked about it already. I think Kelly in particular mentioned something about the effects of having to travel. You get from hotel to hotel. You go to your team bus. You're shuttled to the arena for practice or for the game. You come back. You don't get to take in the city. You're on lockdown. You can't go anywhere. You can't go to restaurants. You can't even order anything out, I suppose. It's just you're limited. I think Kelly actually said that it was like being in the Orlando bubble without any of the benefits of being in the bubble, which that's unbelievable when you think about that. But maybe that's that impacting them psychologically, because unfortunately, just they both looked really, really off. If there was a silver lining other than Bam and Goran, of course, it was the impressive defense of two of Miami's young core, KZ Ogpala and Precious Achiuwa. Ogpala wound up getting the start, and he had an okay game. I really had some high hopes for his performance because he did, again, was getting the starting nod, and I actually perhaps somewhat boastfully tweeted that he was going to be making a huge impact, that I really thought this was the game that all of Heat Twitter had been hoping for, where he was going to be making that impact, and finally we'll see the KZ in effect. KZ will be freed, and all of a sudden he'll be the savior that this franchise is so desperately seeking. But he wound up getting into really early foul trouble and not playing as well or effectively as you would have liked. Finished playing 21 total minutes, most of those in the second half because, he was limited by foul trouble. Some of those really ticky-tack fouls. He picked up four quick fouls, scattered in those 21 minutes. Only finished 1 of 3 from the line. He also had just 1 rebound, 1 assist, 3 total points. I have to say his defense was pretty solid. And Eric Spoelstra even acknowledged it in his postgame presser, which is a definite step up. He talked about KZ making an impact in practice and doing all the right things behind the scenes. Now, of course, this was also a roster that was absolutely limited and hamstrung by the lack of available players. So, I don't think he wants to badmouth a young developing player, but maybe he was sincere. And if that was the case, at least there were some positives that Ogpala can take from tonight's outing. He played some really solid defense. He matched up against 3 of the best scorers in the league. He covered Irving, Durant, and Harden at various points throughout the game. Did a pretty good job, matched up with some of their bigs as well. Was able to really impact the game defensively overall. Just solid showing from him. I don't know if offensively he could have done more. Only took 3 attempts. Unfortunately, all of them were from 3-point range. He only knocked down 1. But still a good, solid outing. Achiuwa, similarly, he played 13 minutes, finished 2 of 4 from the field, 4 total points, 4 rebounds. But his active physicality is just so, it's such a boost, And that's not to say that it's not like Bam isn't providing that or that Ogpala doesn't provide it. But it's just a different level of physicality when Achiuwa's out there. You can feel when he's out there. But he does also pick up fouls a little easily. Not quite Chris Silva-esque. But he's certainly capable of getting into foul trouble early on. He only wound up playing 13 minutes, and I'm not entirely sure why either, because there were moments there where Eric Spoelstra wants to balance that lineup and wants to stagger the minutes between Bam Adebayo and Goran Dragic when they're on the floor, and he wants to give Bam a breather, and he takes out Goran and, so on and so forth. I feel like Precious could probably go in there and play more minutes alongside Goran Dragic. He probably could play alongside Bam Adebayo too, but Spo has been unwilling to break him out there. I'm not sure if that's part of a big plan. Maybe there's some conspiracy that a lot of Heat Twitter could probably read into that. I'm not so sure I'm there yet, but I could see Achiuwa and Adebayo playing next to each other on the floor for sharing some time together, but they have not done so throughout this season just yet. I just want them to be able to get the most out of these players while they still are limited as to who's available and when they're going to be back and everything else. The Jimmy situation, it's purely speculation on my point. I'm hoping he'll be back on Wednesday just because he's been out for over 2 weeks at this time. So hopefully he's healthy, hopefully he's fine, and hopefully he can return back to action sooner rather than later. But there are concerns from the rest of Heat Twitter. I keep asking this question. Maybe it should be a new weekly segment. Is it time to panic now? I'll answer that next here on Locked On Heat. But if there's one thing you don't need to panic about, it's where to place your bets about the NFL, the NBA, or any sports, because there's only one place that has you covered, but it's the one place that we trust, betonline.ag. If you sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and get that promo code Locked On, you'll get a 50% welcome bonus. Again, don't sit in on the sidelines. Get in on the action. Place some bets on the NFL or NBA and make a little money. Don't forget to use that promo code Locked On. You'll get a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, they're your online sportsbook experts. NBA it doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, you get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. So it's kind of, well, first and foremost, let me just say, I did not post this recap yesterday. I'm recording this now on a Tuesday afternoon. It was Monday evening after the game ended, and I was not able to finish recording Locked On Heat because I had to go jump over to Locked On NBA, watch the national games, and, well, just do an episode on that. So apologies for not getting this episode out sooner. But it kind of worked out because now it's been about, you know, I don't know, 12-ish hours, maybe a little bit more than that, 14, 15 hours, and I've been able to kind of see and gauge where Heat Twitter's at. And let me tell you, it's not a good place. You would think that watching your 23-year-old superstar that signed to a 5-year extension after this season and just put up, 67 points combined in two games against the Brooklyn Nets, that might be encouraging considering, again, you've got a 35-year-old aging point guard as your second-leading scorer. Your top player, Jimmy Butler, not available. Tyler Hero, your 20-year-old superstar, or superstar on the rise, perhaps, not available for much of the season. Missed the last five games. And yet, it just seems so dire out there. Everything from Eric Spoelstra to Duncan Robinson to defensive principles are being questioned. And look, it's not to say that this team is perfect, but they were hardly perfect in March of last year prior to the pandemic putting a stop on the NBA season, and they turned out to be pretty good in the bubble. And maybe that's counting on the effects of the bubble too much. Maybe it's just leaning into what Eric Spoelstra does, which is finding a way to maximize his players, to incorporate them in such a way where their strengths are highlighted and their weaknesses are minimized. But hey, that worked. And I think it's going to work again this year too. So I just want to put a pause on any kind of panicking right now. I don't think we're there yet. I don't think we have to be. Look, the season is a weird one. There's no denying that. I mean, with everything that's going on across the NBA and across the planet, there are so many games. Look, just yesterday, two games were postponed. Another couple are postponed now. The Miami Heat are going to take on the Los Angeles Clippers, and those Clippers teams are going to be missing Kawhi Leonard and Paul George probably, because both those players are now in health and safety protocols, just like Jimmy Butler was. Maybe they'll be cleared in time. Maybe they won't. But to me, you can't take anything all that seriously this season because we've seen teams fall apart. The only team that's been somewhat consistent, only team, has been the Lakers. Even the Clippers themselves have had issues, and they've got two pretty good players in George and Leonard. And I think a good supporting cast around them. Even in the East, the 76ers look great one night. They fall apart the next. Without Joel Embiid in particular, they don't look particularly great. And the Milwaukee Bucks, well, Giannis is struggling. The Atlanta Hawks that just rebuilt their team, kind of trying to figure things out. And the Heat, missing so many key players. I think they should have gotten off to a better start if things had progressed normally, but they just didn't have that opportunity. So to me, I don't know. It just gets a little frustrating to see everybody not throw in the towel, but just reach to push that panic button as quickly as possible. I will say the Duncan Robinson talk is just absolutely strange to me. Like, this is Duncan Robinson, one of the best shooters in the NBA. And a video that just posted a couple days ago, Udonis Haslam talked to Kenyon Martin, and he was telling him that he's the best shooter he's ever seen, that Duncan Robinson is the best shooter he's ever seen. This is Udonis Haslam, who's played alongside Mike Miller, Jason Capono, James Jones, Ray Allen, Rashard Lewis, on and on and on. Guys that are known for their three-point prowess. And he likes what Duncan can do better than anybody. And maybe that's just talking up your guy. I could totally see that. But Udonis doesn't strike me as that guy because he could always just hedge it and say, yeah, he's one of the best. I played with some pretty good players. He's right up there. But he said he's the best, flat out. That's high praise for Duncan Robinson. And I think that's pretty clear, too, considering his size, the quickness with which he gets off the shot, the way he gets those shots going. He's not just a catch-and-shoot, standstill-type shooter. He's always on the move. And he was on the move on Monday night too. Just those shots didn't seem to fall. And I looked at those again, given the amount of time in between when I wrapped up recording the first segment yesterday and started jumping onto this second one today. I rewatched all the videos, and I mean, I can't tell you. Look, one of them in particular looked pretty bad, where he missed it hit the side of the rim as opposed to falling short or long. And I remember, I think it was Rick Barry describing that when it comes to shooting, every shot, if you're a good shooter, shots should go, they can go short, they can go long. Never miss right or left, because then that means something's going on there. If a shot goes right or left, then you got hit or you're not a particularly good shooter. In Duncan's case, all of his shots were short, except the one he made. And then there was that one shot that hit the side of the rim. Other than that, good looks, though. Good footing. Everything that you expect from Duncan Robinson just kind of fell apart. I don't know. Maybe it's psychological. You could see him kind of getting into his head a little bit and putting his head down after every miss. It's just the nature of a shooter. And you heard John Crotty talking during the broadcast saying, you just got to, you know, ignore it, move on, put some shots up. Yes, easier said than done. But for Duncan, we'll see how he bounces back. We saw this side of him in the bubble as well, when there were defenses keying in on him, and then he had a chance to respond because it was a multi-game series. In Brooklyn's case, look, he looked good in game one against the Nets, struggle in game two against the Nuggets, who have not seen what Duncan can do. It'll be interesting. I think their defense can be exposed a little bit. They're usually a pretty good team, but they've got Will Barton in there. Michael Porter Jr. might be getting a lot of minutes. He's improved defensively, but he still struggles somewhat. Jamal Murray, I'm not sure if he's going to be available, considering he punched Tim Hardaway Jr. in the, well, let's just say in the midsection, as they often do during the television broadcast, but he might not be available. It should be an interesting game. It's always interesting to see two passing bigs there. Jokic has improved. He's put on some muscle. He's been working out more diligently. He's not the doughy European so many people tend to think of him as. And look, he's slimmed down since the bubble. He's kept the weight off, which is why he is an MVP consideration. If you're looking at Joel Embiid as one of the top players in the league, and I think he deserves that consideration. Of course, there are the two guys in Los Angeles that deserve some consideration too. Giannis, probably not. I think Kevin Durant might be up there. I think Nikola Jokic is probably one of their top three or four players in the league right now. He is certainly in the MVP consideration. This is at least for MVP talk, you know, and when you stack up the most valuable players of the season. That's not to say that Jokic is a top five player hands down every year. You know, players' stats fluctuate. Impact fluctuates. Would you rather build a team with Jokic or Giannis Antetokounmpo, considering Antetokounmpo may not even be a top 10 player this season? I would say you'd probably still want Giannis. As far as the Heat, I do think that there are some issues there. There's a lot of criticism about how they pass out open layups and kick it out there. Andre Iguodala seems particularly egregious when he gets under the rim. He's always looking for that three. I think it's just born into the fact that, well, I mean, he played with some pretty historically good shooters in Golden State. That Durant guy was not bad. Klay Thompson, I hear, is pretty good. Steph Curry, somewhat decent as a shooter. Considering Iguodala spent a lot of clutch opportunities driving to the rim and then kicking out to one of those three historically good shooters, it's probably ingrained in him. But it starts with Jimmy, too. It continues on with Bam. Almost everybody on this roster, I think, is just looking for that open shot from the perimeter. And I'm not sure if that's Spoelstra's principles. I wonder if he's been asked about that. Now that I think about this, even as I'm talking about it, I don't know that he's actually ever addressed it. And I don't know if reporters feel comfortable. I don't know if I've ever even thought about asking him this. He's saying, you know, I notice a lot of your guys driving to the rim and then passing up what looks like a good opportunity to kick out to a three-point shot. Is that something that you're teaching them, or is that just something they do? He probably would answer something along the lines of, well, this is just the unselfish nature of the team. Three-point shots are worth more. You have to talk to each player about it. I don't know that he has a specific answer about why they tend to do that. I'll have to consider that next time I'm in a presser with him. The Heat were off today, and so no opportunity to bring that question up with him. But I think it's curious to see how this is being criticized as if this was the reason why the Heat are 6-10. Well, they passed up a two-point shot for a good three-point opportunity. hence the reason why they've lost three straight games. You could have penciled in those two losses to the Nets pretty clearly. Yes, they're figuring themselves out. Yes, their defense is somewhat, not porous necessarily, but it's a lot more flexible than it ought to be for a title-contending team. But that's the whole point, though, is that they are a title-contending team, and they have three of the most talented offensive players on the planet on their roster. And Miami is without arguably their two best perimeter defenders in Bradley and Butler, one of their top three-level scorers in Tyler Hero, and on and on. I keep bringing these things up over the last few days, weeks, ever since Jimmy was first taken out in January 10th, what seems like an eternity ago. And it sounds like I'm just making up excuses for the team, and you want to find a way to win. Next man up is a popular Heat credo. I totally get that. Yeah, you want to find a way without your top players. But they didn't do it. And I think they have a good natural built-in excuse there. And while it's unfortunate they didn't find a way to get a couple wins here and there that they probably should have, Detroit, maybe the Toronto game, maybe this Nets game. They were in it with the Nets for 44 minutes. What else can you do? It was a good effort, some substantial growth there from a few players. I don't think you have to try very hard to take some positives away. I know from everything I've seen over the last couple of hours, Heat Twitter doesn't want to hear any kind of positivity whatsoever. This is burn the boats, fire Spoelstra, get rid of everybody, trade Duncan Robinson. And I can't do that with Duncan. Like, this is Duncan Robinson. He's part of what made Miami's offense so electric last season in the bubble. This season to start off with, he's still having a pretty damn good season. And yes, there are defensive issues there, but I don't know that it's enough to just erase all that he does positively as a great shooter. There is the gravity that he commands, the attention he commands from other opposing defenses. The fact that Bam is probably getting much easier looks because you've got Duncan running around and you kind of have to keep an eye on what he does if he gets freed up for even a second. If he makes one of those great cuts that he's been perfecting over the last year, all of a sudden your defense is exposed considerably. Yeah, that leaves open shots for everybody else, from Goran to Bam and on and on. I don't know, just for the sake of addressing it, what could you get for Duncan? Probably not much, because his contract's not worth much. And he's going to get paid a lot of money, and there's no guarantee. Any team that would trade for him would be acquiring a rental. I'm not sure what team, aside from Miami, he would want to sign with. I'm sure he'd want to stay with the Heat because he's comfortable here, because of Bam and everything else. And they're going to do everything they can to pay him a lot of money. And now that is a consideration, I know, also, that from Heat fans are thinking, well, maybe it's good to get rid of him now to let some other team have to worry about how much they're going to pay him. You can always bring up a guy like Vincent or Hero as your focus moving forward, and on. You can find another shooter. Maybe it's Max Strus. Potentially valid points. I just don't know that we can pencil in Strus as heir apparent to Duncan Robinson, even if Duncan was heir apparent to Wayne Ellington before him. It has to break right. You have to have that combination of size, work ethic, and everything else. Maybe it could be Strus. It might absolutely be. I just don't know that you want to necessarily trade away a guy that's so comfortable in your system, that has put in the work, and that is, I think, from everything I've seen, well-liked in that locker room from coaches to other players. And it has the respect of players around the league, too, as one of the league's best shooters. I don't think you can have the season that he's had. And, yeah, he's a little skinny white boy, and he's a Division III player that barely got a scholarship to Michigan and on, but I think he's shown up in the NBA and he's proven what he can do. I think he has a respect of his peers, which is a big thing to earn. And I'm just not sure that you're going to be able to trade him now. Would you include him in a package for, I don't know, Victor Oladipo? I don't know why you'd want to make that trade unless you're Victor would probably come here likely on his own next offseason. I don't know that you need to fast forward things. Now, there is, of course, the timeline with Jimmy Butler, something I've mentioned before. And I can understand why that would be a long-term pressing concern here. I'm sorry, a short-term pressing concern, because you want to be able to maximize this season and not just wait till the next. But I don't know that you want to start sacrificing key players in order to acquire Oladipo. I'm just not there yet. Anyway, I'll talk a little bit more about that and answer some of your listener questions here on Locked On Heat. You know, talking about answering questions, have you ever gone to an auto parts shop and maybe you don't know exactly what it is you're looking for, and then you try to explain it, the person behind the counter just looks at you like, hey, clearly you have no idea what you're talking about. You know, you're not an expert, and they are. And the, you know, they handle a lot of silly questions, but you always just go in there feeling like they're giving you a little attitude. At least that's the vibe I've seen before. Not necessarily from me, but I'm saying from other people that have gone into stores, you try to talk to them. It's just tough. They don't always carry the right parts too, and then you just get into this discussion on and on. Why bother going through that? You've got access to computers in your pocket and at your home, and there you can access rockauto.com. A family-owned business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 2 decades. You can choose from hundreds of manufacturers on their easy-to-use site, and you'll get everything you need with just a few easy clicks. And it's delivered directly and safely to your door. You don't have to deal with anybody in customer service. You don't have to wonder about any kind of questioning looks or anything like that. Why spend more? That's the best part, too. You get the same prices as everybody else, and you get an amazing selection. And their low prices are the same for everybody. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. And then go to a section that says, how did you hear about us? And there you write in Locked On so they know that we sent you. It's amazing selection. Reliably low price and is all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's rockauto.com. And if you're looking to try a protein bar, then you got to go after a Built Bar. It's just the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. 18 amazing flavors. So many different ones to choose from. You can build a box of all of your favorites. They're all 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. And so many great flavors, again, that you'll never be satisfied with them. And they're healthy for you. That's the greatest part, too, is that they're great for health-conscious people. If you're looking to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat, then Built Bars are the ones for you because they're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, great for all sorts of diets. And best of all, right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com and enter the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order. So use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and leave a review. This question comes in from Leonard using the hashtag AskLOHeat following Monday night's game. He writes, is it impossible to dream about Bradley Beal? Miami needs to score desperately. Victor Oladipo only for free and a decent four? There's a lot to take down there, Leonard. I mean, yeah, take it easy there. You want to trade away half your roster to acquire superstars. It's not that easy. We saw the drama play out with James Harden. They gave up a whole hell of a lot to get Harden in Brooklyn. And I think their timeline's a little different. You want to capitalize on this, let's say, volatile, combustible pairing of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Now, they're friends, and I think they get along there. I think Irving was all set to become a Nets player. And then he kind of lured Durant there and brought DeAndre Jordan with him as well. So that makes a lot of sense to me. But you add Harden to the mix, and I think it works, obviously. I've been high on the Nets' chances even before they acquired Harden. And with them, I think they're probably one of the best teams in the East. Now, that's not to say that the Heat can't find a way to beat them. I think a healthy Heat roster competes very well with what Brooklyn was able to do. But to Leonard's question, acquiring a superstar, a lot more challenging than you might think. And you can't just plug names into the NBA trade machine and go, okay, well, this player seems to work. We can trade away Kelly Olynyk, Kendrick Nunn, and maybe a future second-round pick for X superstar. They want something in return. There's a report going on right now from the Athletic's Shams Charania that the New Orleans Pelicans are looking to shop Lonzo Ball and or J.J. Redick. The Pelicans, a disappointing team. I thought that Stan Van Gundy would be able to connect with them, that he was their hire because he just brings a different energy than Alvin Gentry. He's going to get them to focus on defensive principles. Well, none of that has panned out. They've sucked They're bad defensively. They're worse offensively to some degree. The Zion adventure continues on. He's great, and then there are deficiencies in his game, and that supporting cast hasn't worked out, and it's been a very weird season for New Orleans early on. And as far as Lonzo Ball and Redick being shopped around there, some of that has to do with David Griffin, the team's general manager, kind of floating these names out there, letting them know that they're interested in selling some of their key players. And you start to see what people who cover the team would want in exchange for either Lonzo Ball, who's shooting 30% from three-point range and is a solid wing player with some playmaking ability. And it's just shocking to me. Trading away players is more expensive than it's ever been. I can't wrap my mind around, a team wanting, let's just say, Kendrick Nunn, Precious Achiuwa, Kelly Olynyk, Andre Iguodala, two first-round picks for a player like Lonzo Ball. I don't think it's quite going to be along those lines. I'm exaggerating here, but this is the potential scenarios that people are talking about, something to that effect, that they want another young player, a first-round pick of some kind, potentially a player of the three or four variety that could come in there and play at the power forward spot backing up Brandon Ingram. I guess that would be Precious Achiuwa. Would you want to trade Precious Achiuwa for Lonzo Ball? Is he the switchable wing defender that helps unlock Miami's defense? Does he even get minutes if Jimmy's back and healthy? I don't see it. I mean, I know Achiuwa can't play alongside Bam right now for whatever reasons that Eric Spoelstra has, but the idea of trading him for Lonzo Ball and his struggling three-point shot, maybe you can get the most of him here. I mean, you have to give credit to Eric Spoelstra for being able to find a way to get the most out of those players, but he is a wing, somewhat undersized. He's not Jay Crowder. He's not handling your bigger fours or fives. He's not going to match up with AD, let's say. So I don't see the Heat connection there. I know some people do like the idea. I know some people are going to be talking about it over the next couple of days until we see a trade potentially play out. It's going to be interesting one way or the other. To go to Leonard's question, is it impossible to dream about Beal? Yes, we have to just stop this. Like, Beal is frustrated. I can understand, as a human being, an NBA star that's getting paid a lot of money, who wants to win games, his career has been so... Not inconsistent, just unfortunate. Like, nothing has broken right for him and the Wizards. They've had some mild playoff opportunities. He's had some great individual seasons, but between John Wall's injury and other factors and coaches and front office changes, just the standard crap that doesn't really happen in Miami. As Heat fans, let me tell you, you are all so lucky that you don't have to deal with the kind of crap that I see so often. And maybe you're aware of this or maybe you're not. From that perspective, like, you're thinking to yourself, man, this Heat team sucks. We should be 10-6, not 6-10. There are teams that would have killed for the opportunity to be in the finals last season, to be a playoff contending team. You look at Minnesota, that hasn't tasted the playoffs except for that one season with Jimmy Butler. They haven't tasted it since. They're not going to taste it this year. They didn't taste it for 10 seasons before that with Kevin Love on that roster. You have no idea. You have no idea what you have to go through. Like, none of this. 41-41, that's a painful memory for you guys. Think about that. Think about the context here next time you grumble about this Heat team. I really think that kind of nuance is important when it comes to fandom. And I know fans generally are going to be somewhat overprotective and expecting the most from their teams. I get it. But there's also sometimes the need for some balance and nuance there, because, I mean, there are teams, the Kings, and on. You look at these, so many teams, the Pelicans even. Yeah, they had AD. They had a superstar. A better superstar potentially than anybody in the Heat roster right now and anybody that we've had on there since prime Dwayne Wade. And they didn't even have much playoff success there. Think about that. I mean, it's just, there's no guarantee that you'll find winning. Miami has been able to be consistently good at it because of their consistency, the way that they've been able to hold on to key principles, work ethic, and Heat culture and everything else. But also, the front office being intact, that you never have to worry about who the coach is going to be. Eric Spoelstra is not getting fired, no matter how much the team switches on defense. or how many minutes he gives Kendrick Nunn, or how many minutes he doesn't give Kaziah Okpala. This next question comes in from, to go to Leonard's question, Oladipo, I don't know. Look, it's not impossible to dream about these things, but Beal's not going to force his way out until he does, and we're going to find out about it probably in the offseason. I don't think Oladipo is going to force his way out of Houston right now. They'd have to lose a lot more games. And again, considering what the market is for a decent player, for a player as good as Victor Oladipo, you'd have to give up a lot. And I don't know that the Heat want to do so this season, during the season, considering, again, COVID, the fact that there's going to be players missing time, that you're going to need to rely on your depth at one point or another. Breaking it up, even to acquire a player as good as Oladipo, maybe if you throw in P.J. Tucker, maybe that sweetens the deal. But you're not going to get P.J. Tucker and Victor Oladipo for Andre Iguodala and Kelly Olynyk. It's going to cost Miami a lot more than that. This last question comes in from Bakunin Ian. I have no idea how to pronounce this. My apologies. Thanks for sending in a question anyway, who writes, what is Bam's obsession with Kyrie Irving? He took his jersey and snuck it out under his own jersey at the end of Monday's game. This has a terrible look to it. No, it doesn't. It's actually really encouraging and something that the Heat have been missing for some time. Other than Dwayne Wade, they didn't really have that player that connected with others around the league across the board. Bam is your best recruiter. You know, this is an old conversation for old heads listening to this podcast, but something that my former co-host Wes Goldberg and I used to debate all the time is, who's Miami's big recruiter? We were all looking ahead to free agency a couple seasons ago and wondering, is there that recruiter on the roster right now? Because without Dwayne Wade, or with Dwayne Wade nearing retirement, who's going to be the player that goes in there and says, come to this team, play with me, we can be part of something special moving forward? And there weren't any clear answers. Was it Justice Winslow with a Duke connection? Was it Josh Richardson? It certainly wasn't Deion Waiters. There really wasn't a clear answer. And now I think we've got one. It's Bam freaking Adebayo. He's an all-star. He's part of Team USA, or was and will be in the future. He's already connected with players. And with Kyrie Irving, there is some history there. Apparently he knows Kyrie's father because they grew up in the same area up north. And so they were connected through their Irving and Adebayo, according to a report from the New York Post. Both grew up in Essex County, New Jersey. Their close friendship runs pretty deep. So they knew, he says, this is a quote from Bam. He says, I've known Kyrie, for a minute because I knew his dad. So it's all brotherly love at the end of the day. He's proud of me. I'm proud of him. And so we left it at that. That's all there is to it. They're friends. He wanted to exchange a jersey. I don't see what the problem is. I'm surprised that people are making this, or maybe you might be the only one, Bakunin, because I'm not sure why this might have a terrible look to it. It's not like he's recruiting players. And it's good to have those kind of connections. It's good to have those friendships. Oh, is that the issue? Sometimes I get so far removed from it. Look, this is a different league than the 1980s. Nobody's spitting on other players. Nobody is, maybe Rajon Rondo is, but that's Rondo. You know, nobody is going to hate players. Look, Josh Jackson talks some crap to Ben Simmons. Good for him. You know, I guess he's a throwback in that regard. Other than that, most players are pretty friendly, and I'm okay with that too. Look, even Jimmy Butler, as competitive as he is, I think he gets along with a lot more players than you think. We heard months and months of talk about how he hated all of his former Timberwolves teammates and everything else like that, and then we saw him back against Andrew Wiggins, I think when Wiggins was back with Golden State, and they were just chatting it up. They were just friendly all over again. It was fantastic to see that happen. And so I think some of these relationships get distorted. I think media folks and fans in particular want to get hung up on these relationships and saying, oh, they should be worse. Or I think a lot of people get along in the NBA circles. It's a brotherhood. You hear players talk about other players, and they'll often refer to each other as such. And I think it's for the best. I don't think you want these players to be necessarily angry. And I think, more importantly, you can be really, really competitive. You don't always have to scowl like Alonzo Mourning. You don't always have to be very negative about the opponent or anything like that. You can still be competitive. Look, Jimmy Butler gets along probably with some of those same Lakers players, and he gave it his all, unquestionably, in the NBA Finals. It's hard to believe that it's been a year since the death of Kobe Bryant. On the Projecting the Screen podcast, hosts Adam Stanko and Noah Kozloff are honoring Kobe's life and career with a two-part special this week. You hear stories you haven't heard anywhere else about Kobe from his teammates, opponents, coaches, and journalists. Make sure to subscribe to Rejecting the Screen today. I'm David Ermil, signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.
Back it up, D.